That's the bell of the Nantucket Lightship, which is now docked in East Boston. The 150-foot ship once helped guide ships through a perilous stretch of ocean off the coast of Massachusetts. Today, as WBUR's Anthony Brooks reports, the Nantucket Lightship is a floating landmark, memorial, and museum.
The ship is painted bright red with the name Nantucket in big white letters on its side. It's a piece of maritime history, a reminder of a time before modern navigation devices like GPS, when ocean travel was much more hazardous.
Basically, a lightship is a floating lighthouse. They put them where it was impractical to build a permanent lighthouse structure.
A floating lighthouse. And this was the biggest, according to Bob Menino, president of the U.S. Lightship Museum, which owns the Nantucket Lightship in Boston. From 1936 until it was decommissioned in 1974, this vessel and its U.S. Coast Guard crew were stationed 100 miles off the Massachusetts coast, where its powerful beacon and foghorn helped guide ships through the Nantucket Shoals, a perilous stretch of shallow sandbars.
And the shoals themselves get as shallow as like 3 feet, and sometimes they break the surface.
Wow.
In fact, that area of the Atlantic is known as one of the graveyards of the Atlantic. Over 700 shipwrecks have occurred on the shoals. So they put a lightship out there in 1854.
The first lightships were wooden sailing vessels that used whale oil to light their beacons. They would stay out for weeks at a time through fog, storms, even hurricanes, lighting a safe way home or out to sea for passing ships. It was dangerous work for those old ships, as well as for the more modern lightships like this one.
That would get your attention.
And for good reason. Lightships were targets. Approaching vessels would steer right toward them. But in the fog, there was always a risk that they wouldn't see them in time to avoid hitting them. So if an approaching ship came within a mile, that alarm would sound.
What that was to prepare to abandon ship. And that happened a few times. Some of the former crew members would say, I remember, you know, being able to almost spit on a ship. You know, you get a ship like the SS United States come by or something, you know, and it'd be pretty scary.
In fact, Bob Menino says the predecessor of this vessel met a tragic end on the Nantucket Shoals, known as the most remote and treacherous lightship station in the world.
So what would happen, you know, before they had radar, the ships would be cutting through the fog, and the Titanic had a sister ship, the RMS Olympic. Looked just like the Titanic. By the time it was foggy, by the time it saw the lightship, they couldn't turn off in time. So they just hit it dead on. It almost cut it in half. The lightship sank, and 7 of the 11 crew members died. As a result, the British government paid reparations to the families, and they paid to have this particular lightship built. And because of the nature of that station, because of the treacherous nature of it, they wanted to build something that was going to be virtually unsinkable and withstand the rough conditions. So this is the largest U.S. lightship ever built. It's double-hulled. It's got double plating on it. And it's got like 43 watertight compartments, so if it was ever split in half or hit, compromised, it would still float.
This lightship was never hit, but it did survive a number of near misses and at least two hurricanes. Bob Menino says in 1954, Hurricane Edna, packing 100-mile-an-hour winds and 80-foot seas, slammed into the Nantucket lightship.
Anchor chain broke, a rogue wave came, hit the ship with such force, it buckled some of the hull plates, smashed through the portholes on the bridge, and tore off the wheel on the helm station, shorted out all the electrical panels, completely shut the ship down.
So they were just adrift.
Yes.
In the middle of a hurricane.
Yes. The water went down the stack, put out the boilers, so they had no power whatsoever.
Oh,
and so the
God.
Danger was that the ship not being able to point it correctly into the seas, that the ship would broach and, you know, turn over. So what happened was, when they got the ship powered up again, they couldn't steer it because the rudder was so badly bent from the force of the seas. But, you know, lifeboats were washed overboard. But what happened was they finally got the auxiliary anchor down, rode out the storm, and then after that it was towed back to Boston and had all the repairs done. So, but it was
what
it
a
was,
harrowing tale.
Oh.
That was a rough place out there. You rocked and rolled. And I mean just rocking and rolling.
As a young Coast Guard captain back in 1970, Peter Brunk did a lot of rocking and rolling aboard the Nantucket Lightship. Brunk says he and his crew spent 3 weeks on the ship and 3 weeks off in Boston. And what he remembers most were the rough seas, 90-foot waves, the fog, and the constant fear of getting hit by an approaching ship.
Every trip we'd have four or five times, we'd have everybody get life jackets on, get the small boat ready to go overboard, and just get ready to get hit. And the ship would come, and they would come down alongside of you maybe 200 feet away and just chug, 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 chug. Sometimes you could hear them, but you couldn't even see them. It was so foggy. I mean, I've seen us blow the horn for 14 days and 14 nights. Couldn't see nothing. And in the wintertime, it was snowing all the time.
Today, restoration work continues on the Nantucket Lightship, but the vessel was almost lost forever. After it was decommissioned in 1974, it fell into disrepair and sat idle for years and was ready for the scrapyard until Bob Menino set up a nonprofit to buy it for $1. Now Menino continues to raise money to restore and preserve this piece of maritime history.
Bob, I'm just interested what inspired you personally to take this on. I mean, it sounds like without you, this might have been just a pile of scrap. Why was this so important to you?
Well, I guess I've always considered myself somewhat of a preservation activist. Just something about the lure of the sea that keeps me fascinated. And plus, it's more than a piece of steel. I mean, I look at this, it's got like kind of a soul to it.
Yeah.
You know, a vessel like this helps save lives. And the people that served in this vessel put their lives at risk. So they're heroes.
The Nantucket Lightship became known as the Statue of Liberty of the Sea, because it was the first sign of America that many immigrants would see as they approached the East Coast. Today, it's open to the public, and last August, its powerful beacon lit up and shined over Boston Harbor for the first time in 40 years. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Anthony Brooks.
Learn more about the Nantucket Lightship and see photos at our website, wbur.org. Lawyers for a group trying to build an Islamic cemetery in the central Massachusetts town of Dudley are warning town officials they could soon face a civil rights lawsuit. That's on top of another legal challenge to the town's rejection of a cemetery permit. That challenge was filed by the Islamic Society of Greater Worcester. WBUR's David Boeri has this update on the legal fight.
In a letter delivered to the Dudley Board of Selectmen, the Islamic Society of Greater Worcester accuses town officials of unlawfully interfering with its secured right to practice its religion. The society has secured a parcel of old farmland to bury their loved ones. But after months of intense opposition by Dudley residents, the zoning board rejected the permit last month on the grounds the Islamic Society did not have any standing to apply. Now, a prominent civil rights attorney, Howard Cooper of Boston, has joined with the current attorney for the Islamic Society and the ACLU of Massachusetts to represent the Muslim applicants. In his letter, Cooper claims the zoning board encouraged and gave into a pervasive and poisonous atmosphere of prejudice and discriminatory behavior.
This project has been opposed, we believe, both publicly and in a manner which has succumbed to public pressure by public officials, seemingly because the applicant here is of the Muslim faith. That presents a danger to all of us.
Although the Islamic Society has a purchase and sales agreement to buy that land, the town claims that because it is under a farm-friendly tax status, the town itself has first rights of refusal to buy the land if it's going into non-agricultural use. By buying the property, the town would have another means of keeping the Muslim applicants from developing their proposed cemetery. Yesterday's letter from Attorney Cooper warns the selectmen not to take that action. But the town's legal counsel, Gary Brackett, who denies any civil rights violations, says the town is fully within its rights.
The town meeting has already indicated that it is willing to have the selectmen exercise their right of first refusal, which is a statutory right. It's not discriminatory in any fashion.
Selectmen are scheduled to vote on Monday whether to buy the land. And with one lawsuit already filed in state land court, it appears a federal civil rights suit may soon follow. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm David Boeri.